Welcome to TSCRA Talk, a podcast by Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. I'm your host, Kristen Brown. Joining me today is Jeremy Fox, Director of Policy Communications and Government Relations at TSCRA. Jeremy, thanks for joining me today. I'm excited to have you back with us on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here again.
Last time we got an update from y'all, it was just after the Texas legislative session ended in March, and a lot has happened in Texas since then. Will you fill us in?
Absolutely. You know, it's been a little crazy around here lately. Normally, after the Texas legislative session ends, we're kind of able to come up for air and transition over to a lot of the federal issues that we work on. But this year was a whole different animal. After the 5 months of the regular session, which were very successful for the association, I might add, the governor actually wound up calling three special sessions, the last of which just ended here in October. So less than a month or so in the past. And now with these special sessions, they're limited to about 30 days or are limited to 30 days. And the governor specifies the topics that are to be discussed during those sessions. So really, it's supposed to be pretty limited, but people can get real creative kind of tying things into those call items. And so in each of those three sessions, we tracked a whole lot of bills that could have been good or bad for cattle producers. Really, in the end, though, there were probably only really a handful of things that passed that will have a big impact on what we do or for cattle producers. And so, you know, when you look at those special sessions, the first one was kind of a wash. That was the one where the Democrats fled to D.C. to avoid voting on some election reform legislation, very politically charged. But fortunately, that all kind of got ironed out. And the second special session was a lot more productive. As far as things that came out of that, I think the most notable thing was that there was some additional funding allocated for border security, which has definitely been a hot button topic of late and welcome news for our listeners down there on the southern border. Mm-hmm. The third special session, though, was really kind of where things got interesting. And so what came out of that, just briefly, one, there was a constitutional amendment that passed will increase the homestead exemption from $25,000 to $40,000. And that's been great news for homeowners, taxpayers. Property tax relief is always welcome. Also, there was a lot of federal COVID relief money that they were looking at appropriating to different things. So a lot of time back and forth discussing what those were. But in the end, the two biggest ticket items really for rural Texas are going to be $500 million that they appropriated for broadband infrastructure and $75 million that they appropriated for rural hospitals. So again, good news there. And then there was redistricting. Redistricting was the big, big thing for the third special session. And as you probably know, every 10 years after the census, they redraw those maps that decide who represents you in the Texas House, the Texas Senate, and the U.S. House. So over the past decade or so, which is the period they're looking at, there have been about 1,000 people a day that are added to Texas's population. About half of those are natural increases. So birth rate exceeding the death rate kind of thing. But the other half are the ones who migrate from outside of the state. And we're growing quick. I mean, that's the bottom line. And really, that's a big deal for rural Texas. Because while the state's growing, it's really not the cities, or excuse me, it is the city and the suburbs that are gaining those people, not rural Texas. And almost half of the population growth in the last decade happened in our five largest counties. So that's incredible, especially when you consider that same data says that 104 of our 254 counties lost population.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
The bottom line is that we're really constantly fighting to ensure that rural communities keep their voice. And it's one of the one of the most important things that we do. And we did okay this time around, but it's definitely going to be a different legislature next session. You know, with all of that shuffling, all of those district boundaries changing, a lot of those veteran legislators have decided to call it quits or, you know, run for some different or higher office. I think we're up to a little bit more than 20 retirements in the House and at least 4 in the Texas Senate so far. And so there's going to be a whole lot of new faces come election time next year and subsequently in the Texas legislative session in 2023.
I anticipate that that will mean that you and your team will be doing a lot of extra work to familiarize yourself with the candidates, as well as educate those folks about the topics that are important to cattlemen and landowners.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a considerable amount of time for us. Candidates have until December 13th to file their paperwork with the Secretary of State to run in that 2022 primary election. So once everybody files, we'll go through that list and our PAC trustees will decide which of those candidates they're going to endorse and support. And ever since those maps were approved about a month and a half ago, we've been meeting with a lot of those current and prospective lawmakers who are planning to run. We really feel as staff that we have an obligation to inform those candidates of our issues. Like you said, educate them on what we do and see how and if their goals align with those goals of the association and cattle producers. You know, we want to make sure we help our longtime friends and allies stay in office, but there's also a lot of good new candidates out there looking at open seats that we want to get to know in the coming months.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I'm hoping by February, early February, I'd say next year, we'll have a good solid endorsement list that we'll be able to share with everybody. And so definitely keep an eye out for that.
Very good to know.
And even better, I don't think at this point, I've been wrong before, but I don't think we're expecting any more special sessions, which is good news because we'll have plenty to keep us busy.
Yeah, definitely.
The legislative session is ended and most people think that, well, that's great. It's time for those guys in Austin to go home and hang out. But that's really not the case. You know, you don't think about it a lot. But the laws that we have to follow every day come from a lot of different places. You know, you have those that come from Congress and from the state legislatures. Those are the most visible. Those are what grab the headlines. But then you also have some of it that comes from state and federal courts in the form of court rulings and judicial precedent. And still more of it comes from state and federal regulatory agencies through a process that's called rulemaking. And it's all kind of tied together. But when the Texas legislature goes home, those other two branches are just kind of getting warmed up. And so over the remainder of the interim here in Texas, I suspect we're going to be really busy at those state agencies and federal agencies for that matter, as they kind of interpret those statutes and fit them into the regulatory framework that they have. I know just last month on the podcast, y'all talked about the whole chronic wasting disease thing.
Yes.
Some rules that have been proposed at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, those were actually passed and implemented. And I won't belabor that particular issue anymore, but it's really a perfect example of how involved we get as an organization in that rulemaking process, especially on those hot button sorts of topics. Those proposed rules come out from those Texas agencies every Friday. And so we're constantly monitoring those for things that could impact y'all. When we find them, we work with agencies and stakeholders, and we support or oppose those rules depending upon our association policy. And so that same thing exists at the federal level too. Those rules are published in the Federal Register every single day. So we're really keeping a close eye on those, which ties in nicely with the next part of my update, I guess, which we're just now getting to, which are the federal issues. I guess when it comes to Washington, D.C., the elephant in the room right now is Build Back Better plan and the infrastructure package that was just passed. There's been a lot of politics tying those two pieces of legislation together, but they're actually two very separate bills. the infrastructure bill, formerly known as the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, was passed a couple of weeks ago, and it's already been signed by the president. That was a bipartisan bill, at least as bipartisan, I guess, as Washington can get these days. But it really focused on what we traditionally think of as infrastructure, roads, bridges, telecommunications, broadband, all that sort of good stuff. We didn't really have a huge bone to pick with that bill. But then there's the Build Back Better plan. That was the bill that was championed by the administration as the, quote, human infrastructure bill. That's where you got into a bunch of the social program spending for things like paid family leave, universal preschool, started with a huge, huge price tag, $3.5 trillion, I think, which meant they also had to look for ways to increase revenue, which means raising taxes. Mm-hmm. I've addressed it elsewhere, but I'll stop right there to say that there is no cow tax. We've heard a lot of rumors starting back in October, and some have even resurfaced here lately. There would be a $2,600 a head tax on cattle. I'm sure there's a lot of folks in D.C. that would love to do that, but fortunately, they knew better than to try it. And it's not in the bill. It never was. At one time, there was a methane tax provision in the bill, but it really only applied to oil and gas production, not agriculture. And my understanding is that that provision even for oil and gas is gone. So a lot of confusion there, but I'm happy to report some good news on that front.
Yeah, definitely.
There was definitely a lot of confusion surrounding some of that cow tax stuff, but definitely happy to report some good news. That's one thing y'all don't have to worry about. There was, however, a bunch of very real provisions that were being discussed that would be really horrible for cattle producers. You know, we're a land-rich, cash-poor profession. So when they started talking about things like imposing a capital gains tax at death, removing the stepped-up basis, hiking certain tax rates, it's really concerning. Yeah, in our world, these aren't things that just affect the rich. They're things that affect even small operations. And being able to pass that land down to the next generation and keep it in production is huge. And even somebody with a small operation could have been facing enough of a tax burden with some of those things that their heirs would have been forced to either sell a ranch or a big chunk of it just to pay Uncle Sam. So good news again. Some of the most harmful provisions that they were being talked about were really left on the cutting room floor before the bill was even rolled out. Since then, there's been a big rift between progressive and moderate Democrats on how much to spend. Ultimately, those moderate Democrats were concerned that the bill would hurt their reelection chances, and there was enough concern that a handful of them were able to force the bill to be cut down, and quite considerably, by about half. I think they're looking about trillion and a half now. And with that reduction in cost, a lot of the tax concerns that we had have eased, but it's still not a done deal. And a lot can change even between, you know, the time we're talking right now and the time that this podcast airs. So I don't want to get too far in the weeds, but they still have some challenges to overcome, especially over in the Senate where the bill goes next, even once it is passed by the House. You know, TSCRA and a lot of other ag groups, for that matter, we've been working for months on this issue, and especially to eliminate those harmful provisions. I think I drafted our first letter to the Texas Congressional delegation back in June. And on that letter, we were able to secure 20-something other ag groups to sign on to that. And we haven't let off of the gas since then. You know, we're still fighting on this issue on this bill every single day.
Well, and that's encouraging to hear and encouraging to know that y'all are keeping your finger on the pulse of it as it changes and morphs, and that y'all are very aware of what's going on with it, because it sounds like it is something obviously that has a big impact on everyone.
It really does. It's probably one of the biggest pieces of legislation that I've seen as far as budget money wise in my time here at Cattle Racers. And so there's definitely a lot to be be mindful of, a lot to be worried about, and a lot to work on through that process. But it's far from the only thing going on the federal side. Washington, D.C. has been a busy, busy place lately. You know, I mentioned the agency side of things earlier, and you know, all of those things hold true in Washington as well. A lot of the agencies are led, or all of the agencies really are led by political appointees. And so every time you have a change in the administration's party, you see this flurry of new rules to either roll back what the last administration did or to, you know, try to get their own agenda in place before they themselves are replaced. A perfect example of that is WOTUS, good old waters of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, back in 2015, the Obama administration was responding to a Supreme Court ruling, and they issued this new WOTUS rule. You know, what waters are under the jurisdiction of the U.S. and would be federally regulated. I think everybody knows the story there. I hope so. You know, huge federal overreach would have regulated crazy things like drainage ditches and streams that only run after rain. And we opposed that rule from the minute it came out. It, fortunately, it was mired in a bunch of legal challenges too, all the way up until it was replaced by the Trump administration. The Trump administration started that process to replace that rule almost as soon as he took the oath of office. But the final rule, called the Navigable Waters Protection Act, was only actually implemented in 2020, which shows the timeline challenges that are faced by every administration with that rulemaking process. Now, not surprisingly, the Biden administration wants to replace it again with something they and the environmental groups find a little bit more attractive. And they have actually been aided by that, by the fact that the new rule was struck down in August by a U.S. District Court in Arizona. So back to the drawing board once again. Right now, we're living under the 1980s rule, which is fine, but it's temporary. So we've already written and submitted comments to the EPA as they prepare to write that new rule, but I suspect we're only getting warmed up on that. I think we'll be dealing with WOTUS for quite a while moving forward. The same thing's playing out elsewhere too. You know, we've seen a huge influx of rule proposals for things like endangered species listings, for the National Environmental Protection Act, NEPA, and certain reporting requirements that fall under that. And so we also have comments due in a couple of weeks on lab-grown meat, the stuff that's cultured in a petri dish from things like bovine fetal serum. So good stuff there. I'm not going to actually get into that too much because we have a fantastic article that I know is coming out in the December issue of the Cattleman Magazine by Hughes Abel to kind of look at some of those details a little bit more closely. But I will say that we're really pushing to make sure that USDA writes those labeling requirements in a way that makes sure that this stuff is prominently labeled so shoppers know what they're getting. Yeah, we really want to make sure we're staying ahead of this issue because it won't be too long before that stuff is for sale in store shelves.
Right, yes.
Yeah, I know there's some other things that I'm forgetting, but I think that's some of the biggest highlights from the last 5 or so months. And I've talked for a pretty good while without giving you too much of a word in edgewise. So is there anything else that I haven't addressed that you can think of?
Well, no, it sounds like you've had a king-size year. Lots of extra things this year. You've provided us with such good insight today. But as we wrap up, I do want to know what you'd say are the two biggest things that folks should have on their radar for the upcoming year.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I think we've probably already hit on them a little bit, and that's going to be the midterm election. And I have a feeling a lot more on the regulatory front. Yeah, like we had talked about earlier, there's just going to be so much changing here, especially in the state legislature, but in Congress as well, I think. And it's going to be really important for everybody to stay plugged in and informed about their decisions at the ballot box. You know, lots of new names on those ballots to think about for people. And in Washington in particular, it's going to be big too. Historically, you see Congress flip parties during the midterms when you have a president of a new party. And so, yeah, we're possibly looking at a flip back to a Republican controlled U.S. House or Senate. And so, you know, we're going to do our best to weed through all of that as it happens and keep y'all informed. But I really just urge everybody to stay informed and stay engaged. And same thing on the regulatory front. You know, I think we're going to be doing a lot more in the way of comments, especially federally, on a lot of these issues. And when it really gets going and when we have really big issues, we're going to be pushing out information on how y'all can submit comments and weigh in on those things too. And so, Kristen, I know you and I probably don't get to talk as often as we should, but for the real timely stuff, you know, I'd encourage everybody to keep an eye on those daily update emails from the Cattleman Magazine. Check out my View from Austin posts and also our Facebook and Twitter page. You know, that's where some of the most timely stuff when we're trying to really, really push something out there quickly, where we try to find folks. And, you know, maybe if I haven't talked too long by now, maybe you'll even have me back on the podcast here at some point.
Well, we definitely want to. I always personally find this very interesting, and y'all's work is definitely appreciated for what you're doing down there and staying engaged, keeping us as members informed. So thank you for what you do and for your time today.
No, you're very welcome. It's an honor to be able to work for the association and for the industry that we do here. And there's just so much that producers have on their plate every day. And to be able to take a little bit of that burden off and focus on it here so y'all don't have to, that's what we're here for. So thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate it, Jeremy. To learn more about TSCRA, visit tscra.org.